wolf on the hill is never as hungry as the wolf climbing the hill.
Lone wolf is a term commonly used by many people. It means that they used to belong to a group, but left, to become stronger. By thinking and acting alone, the lone wolf acquires superior cunning, agility, imagination and skills unknown to members of the pack. The lone wolf is independent of and distances itself from the petty bickerings, expectations, demands, mediocrities and unfulfilled dreams of other people, groups or organizations. The lone wolf is often branded as the rebel,
for it is the sovereign lone wolf who stands alone in all of his or her glory.
I think he means well.
Okay, I have a book about the hoax. You call it 20th Century Hoax.
Yeah, I had that.
Okay. I've been really nice talking to you anyway. Does might make right, in your opinion?
What is right?
Okay. Let's leave it at
that. We know what might is.
Yeah. What, so your opinion is that the reservation is doing a good thing for a bad situation. What is your opinion of protocols?
I think they're valid. I think that, what is amusing to me that, while one court found them to be forgeries, another court, said that they were not. A later court said they were not. And if they were a forgery, who forged them? And they still fit.
They don't fit
anybody else.
Even their forgery, all the predictions are true.
Yeah.
It was both came in 1985. After that, we had the German, the Hungarian, and the Russian Revolution.
Well, I think.
And Zionism in just in 1921. Or 1918. Yeah. About the same year, it was the Balfour Declaration.
And I think that, Henry Ford's version of that is, he said, they fit. They fit today.
No, even if we think don't think much of the Negroes, because they're generally speaking are not smart as a Jew, of course, poses a different problem because
they're more honest than a Jew.
Well, what I'm talking about the Jews is because they are much more intelligent. Most even white people, they have alliance with the devil. Why not? You know, this is why they pose such a problem. And that a Jew has Zionism, a Jew has, I wrote in Greek, so I can write messages in Greek letters, but the same pronunciation. So, poor, they can have Bolshevism and they can have capitalism. So, you know, either, no matter who wins, they will win. You know?
Sure. That's why they run the labor unions and they run Wall Street.
What less civil liberties should we at first try to restrict or curtail for this problem?
Well, you can't have any kind of dual citizenship.
Double loyalty.
You have to restrict all the money flowing out of the country to Israel.
Jesus. As mentioned, 72, I have a book called The Destruction of Freemasons, written right after the war of World War One, and by Eric von Ludens. He was saying that he was convinced the Freemasons were controlled by Judaism, which I can give. Do you have that book?
I've got all those books.
Okay, and he gave in 1972 $10 billion to Israel. Jesus.
And miscegenation must be ceased.
In the early 60s, the South generally and the Klan particularly sought to arms for exclusion, not just so much as the Negro, as a northeastern liberal Jewish establishment taking, going to the native south, you know what I mean, social workers, destroying the national territories. That is interfering the rights of the states and the people by imposing their cultural way of life. Do you see the Klan or the white race in general resorting to such tactics again?
Well, the Southern Klan reacted, of which it's been forced into a reactionary situation several times. I see the new Klan acting, not reacting. I believe in circling the enemy, attacking him from behind.
Do what he's best at. Johnson, that's the name of the guy for that, the terrorist group. I don't think that anything here was Brazilian, but it's spread throughout the world. I mean, everywhere. There are some ultra-conservative organizations. Okay, this is what I just told you about. With what apparatus do you usually use to get to the other side's views, the Negro views?
To get what?
Their views, situation.
I read their books. I read Marcus Garvey's works and Malcolm X, and I talk to these people sometimes. And I try to read what they say, not what some stupid white liberal says they said.
Okay, not white.
They distort everything.
Liberal interpretation.
Yeah.
In the event of a KKK takeover, what will you bring about? How will you bring about total segregation?
I'm not interested in the KKK takeover.
I mean,
I'm
interested peaceful in takeover.
Well, what you don't understand is I'm building a movement. The KKK is a part of that movement, but it's not the totality of the movement.
Okay. In the event of your movement getting control of government, how would you bring about total segregation?
Total segregation? By the law.
But I mean, but what legislation?
We would simply, what I would like to do is something humane, to where we could negotiate with black nationalists for some area of segregation until such time as better things could be figured out.
Okay. Do you feel like Malcolm X of establishing independent black republicans within the United States, or like another guy in the early 20s of repatriating them back to Africa?
Well, I think the best thing would be have total separation out of the country, but if we have to have a first step, putting them in one part of the country, I think that should be done. I would like to see it done in a way that it doesn't develop a race war. I believe we're headed for a race war. And if we go to, if a race war erupts, the black race has no chance.
And also, there's too much influence from the Soviet Union. They're too smart. Well, well, under what conditions would you allow the death penalty? You said it for narcotic pushers, murder, I'm sure. How about rape, treason also? Anything else that you think of?
Oh, yes. Crimes against the workers. People who embezzle large funds from pension funds, corporate fraud, defrauding stockholders. In other words, severe white-collar crime should be punishable by death.
Oh, God, who would have ever thought of this? What really caused the Miami riots?
Well, there was only about a 0.5% open occupancy rate in Miami. The first wave of Cubans pushed a lot of blacks and poor whites out of jobs and houses, and the second wave was the straw that broke the camel's back.
The trial?
Nah, that was just...
Oof.
Yeah, that was just a... No, the Cubans, that was the reason.
Yeah,
and I don't blame the blacks for rioting about that. I just blame them for murdering whites. Unless they want to murder Carter, that's the guy they should be murdering.
I'll pay for your ticket.
But grabbing just white people and discriminating. But I understand the black race, they are rather juvenile about these things, and they react that way. And so they just grab whoever they can grab. But I can understand their frustration and sympathize with them in some ways. Because what affects them also affects poor white people.
North in L.A., we hear about the media, which we know who control them, and a black organization always bitching about some policeman shooting a nigger. Excuse my language. Another thing just happened 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And is this another Jewish attempt to undermine traditional law and order, you think? Or just not, just to disrupt society?
No, it's an attempt by the Jews to have their cake and eat it, too. They want a cosmopolitan type of society to where they can hide themselves. But in doing that, they're creating a jungle-like atmosphere and then telling the police to go out and straighten it out. The police are increasingly having more and more trouble straightening it out. And so they have to resort more and more to killing people. So, in some cases, I have sympathies with the black community. In other cases, the individual black criminal, I have no sympathy. But I believe that the Jewish white establishment would shoot me down just as quick as they would a black.
But why are they having the police bitching about the police now? They are, you know.
The police.
The Jews bitching about the police. So
Jews don't have a solid front, you see. Everybody thinks the Jews have a solid front. Jews think different ways, too. I mean, they have all kinds of different ideas that they're pushing. Some are one way, some are another. Everybody keeps thinking that Jews are, they all get up in the morning and take a vote, and they're all for all one way, and they're not. And if you read Jewish articles, you'll find that out. They argue amongst each other, and sometimes they even want to kill each other. Sometimes they do.
Negroes have admitted they have benefited from slavery. I think you know what I'm talking about. Also,
that's looking at it through the eyes of a capitalist, see?
Oh, no,
if you get a big car, you've benefited.
Also, they see this as the idea that these are some very conservative Negroes. What do you think about them? Anti-communism.
Depends on what they're trying to conserve. If they're trying to conserve their race, that's good. If they're trying to conserve Jewish capitalism and communism and all that, I have no use for them. I respect these people. In the book, I don't respect Uncle Tom's. They're nothing but carbon copies of the same whites that sell out.
The Negroes, unlike the Cubans, who are very, who stick together and they work together, at least we can say that's positive about the Cubans, the Negroes have a tendency to be very lazy. You know, it's nothing to do with...
A lot of them do.
Is that something characteristic in their genes, you think? That's genetic. Mm-hmm. Unlike other I told you about this. You think that's true about the Cubans, but I think they're the most prosperous of all Hispanics.
Yeah, they stick together, but we're not getting the best Cubans, see. The problem is we're getting the worst Cubans. And we don't need more people in this country. We have no use for more people.
Throughout history, the Jews have always led revolutions against the traditional order, the church, and all the common people. And particles for both and truth. For example, the Hungarian, the German, and the Russian Revolution. In the 50s, 1980s, anti-Jewish method quelled because of the Holocaust. Now, some people say the Holocaust is a hoax. What do you say?
Sir, it's a hoax.
I agree with you, but I... Also, people have often likened the Jew worshipping the devil, since everything they do is geared towards his aim.
That's true. I believe Talmudic Judaism is satanic even by reading it. Have you read much of it?
No, I haven't.
Well, they say that you can have sex with a cadaver, a child at the age of 3. The most vile things are in the Talmud.
And foreign policy, do you favor an isolationist policy?
Yes. I mean, we shouldn't be meddling all the time. I think that that we should operate from self-interest, but if somebody's not attacking us, well, then there's no reason for us to be bothering them.
But how would you, I knew what your answer was going to be, but how would you, what would be your plan to halt soviet expansionism?
Quit financing them.
Will that be all? Aren't they semi enough on their own footing now? Because they may have a...
They're only getting strong because we're getting... They're not getting stronger, we're getting weaker.
That's an interesting observation, I think.
They're looking stronger because we're getting so weak.
Let's see.
If you look on those Russian subs coming in, you'll see nothing but Aryan people on them. You don't never see a black man in the Soviet Union.
They're going to put their Turkish tribes on them. The Turkish, in a way, has gone a bit down in the times. And those parts of Russia are the Soviet Union.
Well, I have films of the Russian troops marching, and boy, they look pretty decent compared to what our army looks like.
Well, I'm certain, the minorities in Russia are some Mongol tribes. They're less illiterate than they were during the Tsar.
Yeah.
But then,
maybe we can create a desire for the white Russian people to start thinking about race. And I've seen some of it trickling through. That Russia is now becoming concerned about the Mongolian pressure and birth rates and so forth. So maybe at about the same time we're waking up about race, they may begin to waking up about race.
You know what I wish to become? I think I wish to become, say, a priest, and that's a free passport to Russia and Lithuania, because I know that there are a lot of nationalists, like Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who are in there. The best thing to do is to actively support the white minority within Russia. I mean, there are certain non-Russian, but white, like the Georgians. They came from the Caucasus. They're more white than, me or you. These people. Kuhn, there's a name by the person like Kuhn who wrote about, I don't think he's a racist, but wrote a book about the races of Europe. You know?
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. You see how he describes these Georgians. Stalin was a Georgian. Okay.
Yeah.
The language. I also can say about the Basques. The Basques, their language is totally primitive, unrelated to any European languages. But I think the Basques are representative of one of the few tribes that were not dominated by the Europeans. Most of the Europeans are not pure what they originally were with their language. There were a lot of intermingling with the original. So that could explain the 12 tribes, how come there's a different language between humans.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, I do I research on my own, so I can be, let's say, a Rosenberg in a way. It's certain areas, I guess.
Sure.
For your removal. But, to activate such, because this minority pressures in Russia are good in a way, even though they're Mongoloid, because it's just going to disintegrate the Soviet nation. And since they're aware of their nationalistic, the Russians will be aware of their nationalistic alternatives, and since they can't go any more left, you know, there's possibilities in this. But remember, the Jewish population in Russia is 4%, 1% more than the past here. Okay, almost all the publicity you get is evidently negative. So how will you go spreading around the decline is pro-white?
Well, I don't believe there's anything like bad publicity. I think there's the only bad publicity is no publicity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, since the regular law enforcement are not able to counterattack such terrorists or terrorist-promoted groups such as the CWP, RCP, JDL, NAACP, the neighbors, is her. Do you see your clan organizing vigilante or people's militia? Since it is a constitution right to organize the people's militia.
Well, I guess under the posse comitatus rules of the Constitution you could. But obviously the establishment is going to be, will be giving us problems just like they gave the fascists problems in Italy. So it's not that easy. The only thing I can do is when they attack us, we can do it to them.
Do you see the American Nazi Party as a foreign, like, for example, German import? Because like the KKK, as you mentioned, is really, it's more American than it's amazing.
Well, I see that, unfortunately, the National Socialism in the United States has been so comic opera, 1930 type. Mm-hmm. I've run into some of these people who are very intelligent, but a lot of them are, they're trying to run this thing like a 1930 movie, and if Hitler were alive today, he wouldn't do it this way.
Yeah, I know, like Matt Kohler.
Yeah.
I got two editions of his paper. You know, his paper's not going to speak like that. Hitler, well, in a way, if you write early history of Hitler in the early 20s, in a way, he was like, remember when he tried to little push from Munich? He learned a lesson this day.
Well, that's the way they are now. They're weak and...
But in Latin American countries, there's
I think they aid the Jews. The Jews use them as a specter to raise money. It scares the hell out of the poor Jews. Mm-hmm. They continually rip off Jews. The rabbi goes around and says, if you don't give us money, the Nazis are going to get you.
Jews use MS because it scares poor Jews. This is true, I think, because...
That's what Skokie was all about. They were losing their grip on this Holocaust crap, so they stoked up that Skokie deal so they could introduce that Holocaust study.
Collins' father was a Jew.
I know.
In a Klan, U.S. government, do you see cooperating with third world countries for humanitarian aid?
For summary thing, maybe.
Like the Soviets are coming, would you see?
Well, I believe in any kind of alliance that you need for a given moment, alliance of necessity.
I'm sure you think.
Make them and break them.
These are two more questions. How's that? Oh, no.
But like, you know, the Arabs, if they need food, fine, we'll give them food. We need oil.
It's capitalism. What advice would you give to the...
Well, that's barter. Free enterprise. Trade.
What advice...
Capitalism is different.
Yeah.
It's usury, and it's...
It's a bank.
Monopoly, and...
What advice would you give to the Republic of South Africa in respect to its current unrest?
Well, they built their problems in by bringing all the blacks in, see. They let the Oppenheimers gain control of the country, and instead of bringing white labor in from Europe, they took the cheap route, brought the blacks in from Africa, and now they're becoming a victim of their folly.
Do you favor a solution of ASU must have? European, I suppose you support a European Parliament, huh?
Well, depends on whether it's Jewish control.
Oh, you know what I mean, a white...
Yeah, I think so, yeah, sure. And I would support a North Atlantic company of nations type thing, too.
Confederation.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would support one going from United States and Canada. Some Latin, the predominantly white Latin countries, like Argentina, all of Europe, extending from here to Vladivostok. So there's some minority, the Russian population spread throughout.
Yeah, there's a lot of white Russians.
Yeah, and when I mean Russians, I mean the Russians, the Slavs. Yeah. But there's some other members of Imperial Russia who are not white. But going down to Iran, people don't realize how Iran is basically a white nation. They have some Arab, unfortunate Arab influence, but originally they called themselves.
Khomeini, if you'd shave, it looks white to me.
Yeah, the Shah definitely was white. These people are actually more white than us in some cases.
Too bad the caste system in India didn't work, but then go to
those systems never do work.
Then go to the Arab worlds and Northern Africa.
There's white Arabs too. Some.
There's the ruling caste system. Yeah. It depends. The ones that are closer, like in North Africa, they intermingle too often.
I know.
Sadat has Aryan features except for his skin. You notice that?
Oh, I don't think he's got Aryan features. He's got Negroid features to me.
Oh, not Sadat. Excuse me. The Aborigines. You know the Aborigines in Australia?
Yeah.
They're not white at all, but you notice something? If you notice, their hair is not theirs. So it's interesting how these races come about. I mean,
I haven't studied those people very much.
Okay, they're like, they have the same structural as white, but they're black. And there's examples of Indians. Indians, they have a perfect Aryan Nordic face.
Yeah, I've seen that.
But see, just intermingling.
Yeah, I've seen that,
yeah. Okay, this is just a few questions.
Come on, man.
I'm so sorry.
I've answered more questions for you than anybody yet. Even
how many reporters?
NBC and CBS.
How many reporters have you got?
I lost count of them.
Yeah. You know who Deese is? The guy from West Virginia? I read that there was an article in the Times about him. Okay, I know basically all these questions because we answered them. Yeah, you feel sorry about the Greensboro incident, don't you?
Mm-hmm. I would not. It wouldn't have happened that way if it had been up to me.
How active are you in antipsychotics?
Very active.
You know, this is just disintegrating.
Yeah.
Because if you're all in dope, how can we? Since admittedly the Border Patrol is doing an excellent job relative to its numbers, you know. They're doing a hell of
a... It's a cosmetic, though, that the fat cats put out there just to give the impression that they're doing something. The Border Patrolmen are trying, but they're never meant to solve the problem. They've used that for decades to con the American people into believing that the government wants to solve the problem.
Did you still, forgive me, would you forgive me for taking all this time?
It's all right.
What do you think of me anyway?
Of you?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're interesting. You're young and inquisitive, and you seem to have done quite a bit of study and research, and it seems that you come from one position to another very quickly, and it'll be interesting how you go.
So now you mentioned Gladio earlier. Let's talk about Gladio, because obviously there's the historical aspect of Gladio, which we know has to do with stay behind armies, basically the fascist elements, in the post-World War era, the former Nazis and basically fascist groups that were being utilized by the Western intelligence apparatus of NATO, and basically were used not only as stay behind armies in case of a Soviet invasion, but oftentimes were engaging in terror attacks in the West to then blame on various leftists, whether it's Red Brigade or socialist parties, right, to basically try to create political shifts internally in the West.
Yes. Matter of fact, as you know, like during Gladio I, the years of lead in Italy, terrific bombings, even the Bologna bombing, Positiv Fontana, they were all done by the stay-behind units, the Gladio units, spurred on by the CIA, funded by the CIA, and all these attacks were blamed on the communists. And of course, the communists were completely, 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 you know, innocent. So it was a ploy. But not only in Italy, but in Germany, the Hamburg bombing, throughout Latin America. I mean, the dictatorships, the dirty war in Argentina, this was all part of Gladio. Mm-hmm. And the figures that played in Gladio at that time are incredibly interesting because one, of course, is Jose Maria Bergoglio, who was Pope Francis.
The current Pope, because he was... Pope. Well, precisely, no one really knows, can account for what he did during the dirty war in Argentina, which was brutal. Obviously, he saw the execution of so many people who were considered leftists, right, socialists, of all ages, right?
The priest who would support the liberation theology? I mean, you got to realize he turned over two of his priests, not only the members of their congregation, but the priests themselves, turned them over to the junta, where they were tortured for months and months and months, where members of their congregation were loaded on transport helicopters, flown over the ocean and dumped off. This was all part of Pope Francis, and it was all part of Gladio I,
right,
which of course never ended.
When Francis was a cardinal, basically, he was just a regular bishop at that time.
No, he was the provincial general of the Society of Jesus. He was a Jesuit.
I see, just one of the generals. But so this obviously, Gladio does harken back to Italy. A lot of the apparatus of the not only financial apparatus, which you cover in your book about the money laundering that went through the Catholic Church,
right,
the Vatican Bank historically, but also the ties to the mafia, who were obviously connected to the drug world, and then that tied them to our own intelligence, particularly CIA, that
yes,
was engaging in the traffic, whether it was heroin and opium from the Golden Triangle during the Vietnam War years or during the Afghan War in the 80s, obviously seeing a lot of the opium profits, opium being laundered from Afghanistan through Turkey, and the profits being laundered through the Vatican banks. So where do we ultimately stand as far as understanding the relationship of Gladio past to present?
Gladio never stopped. It never stopped. Most recently, it concerns the operations of Gladio II are focused in Central Asia, focused in not only Turkey, but Syria, Iran. I mean, that's where the focus is. And for a while, it was Libya. But it's still going on. That has never, never, never stopped.
But what are the indications that we can be sure that it's continuing?
Okay, let's begin with just one, going back to 1998. We had the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. We know that right now all the documents have come out that the person that the press and the CIA said was guilty of perpetuating or commandeering these acts was a guy by the name of Muhammad Ali, like the fighter, Muhammad Ali,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
He was from California. He allegedly turned radical and he joined Al-Qaeda and then he bombed the embassies. Well, what really happened is this guy was not taking part in the activities in Afghanistan or Pakistan at all. He was on U.S. military bases being trained once again by Army intelligence. When he was finally captured, really by mistake, he was brought on trial. And guess what happened? He disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Disappeared. Go poof into thin air.
Right.
Then you have, of course, the mysteries surrounding 9/11. You got false flag attack, which is a characteristic of Gladio. Look at Saddam Hussein. Look at Gaddafi. Look right now about Assad. Every day it goes on. Assad right now, he's creating new weapons of mass destruction. He's creating chemical weapons, so we have to bomb them again. This is all Gladio. You see, it are false flags that have no basis in reality at all. And yet the American people buy it time and time and time again.
It seems that every time there's a major push by Assad's regime or the Iraqi regime to actually depose the ISIS base, we get then an allegation that immediately pops up of chemical weapons being used, and then U.S. forces start to shift, you know, again against the Assad regime, right?
I could scream because, number one, I very rarely talk to anybody who's insightful. But this is what happened, and you know it, and you know what's happening right now with that whole situation. It's we created ISIS. I mean, ISIS is no less than the people up in Islamberg, no less than Gulen, is a CIA creation. John McCain, for heaven's sake, was over there with the ISIS officials. We created them. They came from the Al-Nursi group, the Syrian Liberation Front. these two organizations combined, and they morphed into ISIS. It's our creation. We create them. We still direct them. When ISIS warriors are injured in battle, where are they transported? They're transported, for heaven's sake, to Israel. They're treated by the Israelis in Israeli hospitals and brought back to battle.
Well, plenty of the rebels have acknowledged that they've been supported by Israel, and they've thanked Israel for helping them throughout. In fact, arms are oftentimes caught, Israeli arms are caught on, you know, en route to the rebel groups. But when it comes to this, then the grand scheme, the grand chessboard game, obviously we're seeing the neocon strategy. Wes Clark talked about it, destabilize and overthrow the governments of Iraq, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, Syria, Iran. Yeah. I mean, this was the strategy that he talked about over 15 years ago.
Yes.
And obviously we've seen it come to fruition to a large extent. But what is the game is ultimately, is it just continuing to destabilize the sovereign regimes that oppose the will of the various financial oil conglomerates, or is it to create just total chaos in this entire region?
Well, the ultimate goal, of course, is money, wealth. You know, real wealth comes from natural resources. Our money is, you know, just fabricated. It's not backed by anything.
Mm-hmm.
But real wealth comes from natural resources, be it gold, be it oil, be it heroin, which is the third most valuable commodity in the world right now. Another reason we're in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
But the end of the game can be is being played to be won. It's not a game that will go on ad infinitum.
Mm-hmm.
So the end of the game is total economic control of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Joining me now is the godfather of British comics, Pat Mills, whose new book, Be Pure, Be Vigilant, Behave, 2000 AD and Judge Dredd, The Secret History, is out a week today. Pat, welcome to Going Underground. Let's just begin with the young godfather of British comics, as it were, always naturally inclined to fiction which attacked authority. You say these days heroes are never working class like Jeeves in P.G. Wodehouse.
Absolutely. I think when I was putting 2000 AD together, it was an instinctive thing to have working class heroes, ordinary people as heroes. And it's only over the last few years I thought, why am I doing this? And I had to go back to my childhood and realize that probably like most kids, you look for role models you can identify with, and there are very few. Most of the great fictional heroes, Sherlock Holmes, James Bond, and so forth, they're upper middle class. And it reminded me of why one of my first favorite characters was Jeeves, because here's a guy who's working class, who's making a complete mockery of his boss.
But when you try to put working class people into your fiction, quite bizarre results at the state mandated BBC when you tried to put a working class captain in a Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, and that was my first realization that there was this kind of covert censorship in the media. Up until then I thought, well, as long as you base people on real characters who you know, it will work. And we found the BBC script editor said, no, you cannot have a working class captain of a spaceship. Now, the spaceship in question was a kind of abattoir in space, and we based it on the captain of a dredger, who would hardly be a kind of Richard Todd figure, you know, very smooth talking or anything. So it'd be very plausible for him to be working class. But the script editor said, no, it's out of the question. And that's when I realized just how far...
Because in his memoir, you say it's deliberate. This censorship of characters within fiction.
I think it's whether it's a deliberate thing on the behalf of the, you know, anybody, what should we say, in control, or whether it's just the censor is in their heads. I think it's probably a bit of both.
It wasn't only Jeeves, though. You talk about Mad Magazine. You might have to remind some people what Mad Magazine is, because it was so vehemently against corporate capitalism all through, presumably when you were reading it.
Mad Magazine.
The American Mad Magazine.
I took Mad Magazine and Private Eye and publications like that very much for granted. But growing up with them, it obviously influenced my attitude to these things. But coming back to censorship, the real thing that really brought it over to me is in the centenary years of the Great War. 2014 to 2018. And there's nothing anti-war out there. There's nothing. And so if you think of some of the great anti-war films like, say, Monocled Mutineer, Oh, What a Lovely War, even Blackadder Goes Forth, they're not shown on terrestrial television. And I found this specifically in my case where I wrote a series called Charlie's War, which is very well known, and we couldn't get it anywhere in terms of the media, and it wasn't even shown at a British Library exhibition on anarchy in comics. Well, Charlie's War is probably the most anarchistic, and it was not featured. They said, oh no, we're not going to do that one, we'll maybe cover it later. So whether this censorship is just an attitude in people's heads or whether there's an edict from on high, I don't know. In the case of the Great War, I think it is from on high. There's no doubt about it. And I have actually studied that in detail, and I was quite dismayed and depressed by the fact that there is nothing anti-war out there.
Okay, so by going into science fiction, were you able to bring these themes out in a whole different way that bypassed the censors in Britain?
Yeah, it's an escape. In other words, as long as it's in a galaxy far, far away, it's fine. The minute that you have ordinary heroes, ordinary characters dealing with everyday situations, that's a problem. But science fiction, we more or less did everything we wanted.
Now, when it comes to cinema adaptations, which millions of people will have seen, let alone the popularity of the comics, Judge Dredd and Dredd, what did you make of this new report that maybe 800 Hollywood movies, 1,000 TV shows had direct input from the Pentagon and the CIA, even Meet the Parents films about where the CIA would have input? What about Judge Dredd and the creations you did when they come to cinema? Were they
affected by the Pentagon? Just to come back to that, the one that disturbed me in particular was, I think it was Iron Man and The Incredible Hulk. And there were CIA advisors on set. And I just think,
and this is really true, because
yeah,
some people might be thinking,
I know. I had to read the article about three times, and then I thought, yeah, this is for real. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, because I think a lot of superheroes are really sort of corporate characters who are, you know, confirming corporate values and corporate attitudes. Judge Dredd, by comparison, I think certainly the second movie, I think, was an independent. And so I can't imagine that the CIA were involved in any way on that film, no. And that's probably why it's so good.
But you explicitly did tackle political issues like the IMF, corporate power, Palestine. There was a complaint by the British Board of Deputies, deputies here in Britain.
Well, that was a remarkable story. It was an amnesty issue of Crisis that I put together. And Crisis is a comic that came out in the 90s, early 90s. And so I interviewed a Palestinian psychiatrist who talked about the situation in the Gaza Strip. And based on his account, we featured a scene where the Israeli defense forces had beaten up a Palestinian kid who's lying on the ground with his limbs broken. And the Jewish Board of Deputies complained that he was lying in the shape of a swastika. In other words, the way he was angled. Well, that's really seeing faces in the fire. And I think what disappointed me more was that they weren't concerned with the very tragic circumstances that were going on in Gaza then and now. All they were concerned about was that there was some kind of subliminal message being sent out. Well, the truth is, comics and with writers and artists, we're not that clever. You know, we don't sit around thinking, oh, we'll work that kind of thing in. And the remarkable ending of that story is that they complained to Robert Maxwell, who was the publisher, and he told them to get knotted.
The media tycoon, the controversial.
Yeah, it was just astonishing that he did.
The more generally, are you now beginning to see comic superheroes very much in a Marxist context? You spoke at Marxism at the festival here in London this
week. Yeah. Well, I suppose I've never liked American superheroes. And when I say that, I mean the corporate characters, the guys who are billionaires or arms tycoons, and they go out at night and beat up the poor. And I never really thought about it other than, well, I don't like them very much. And that's why, unlike my peers, I've never been interested in working for American comics, or at least these kind of guys. But I think the more one looks at it, the more one becomes aware of just how, I don't know, how there's a subtext behind it. And perhaps there is a subliminal message here. Superheroes are guys above us. You can't be an ordinary hero. You can't be a superhero, you know, unless you're a tycoon or a lawyer or somewhere in the upper middle classes. So, yeah, it's something.
Although he's
quite
a judge in the judiciary, Judge Dredd.
Well, he's still a foot soldier, Judge Dredd. And there are contradictions about him. One of the attractions of Judge Dredd is because we had this problem. How do we get across the things that for us as writers and artists that we feel strongly about? How do we do that and still make our characters attractive and appealing? Well, one of the ways you do this is you focus on the bad guys. Now, on one level at least, Dredd is a bad guy, and we're all attracted to villains. We'd rather read and watch villains than heroes, because heroes can be a bit boring. So that's the background to Judge Dredd. You know, he's the character we love to hate.
Now, the impact of your work, obviously, on popular culture in Britain is, I mean, you mentioned so many different names, from political cartoonists to comedians. Alan Moore, I understand, he was given a chance in 2000 AD. What's it feel like when you know that the artistry of V for Vendetta, obviously, that mask, the anonymous mask, is now seen on demonstrations maybe in every country in the world?
It's fantastic. V for Vendetta was in Warrior, but it was all around that same time. And the Alan story that I think many 2000 AD fans will remember with great love is Halo Jones, which is about an ordinary girl, not a superheroine, who she's stuck on this kind of sort of gigantic council estate, if you like, in space, and she wants to get away. She wants to get out, and she wants to have a life. And so that, I think, is typical of the kind of stories that we try to bring across in 2000 AD.